You're listening to the AHDB Cereals and Aussies podcast. Highlights from your arable levy organisation.
Hello and welcome to this bonus episode of the AHDB Cereals and Aussies podcast. I'm Eleanor Holdsworth, and in this episode we're looking at soil health. First up, I've got Jason Paul and Amanda Bennett from AHDB to introduce one of the projects in the Great Soils Programme.
Helping you to protect and improve the productivity of soils are the main aims of AHDB's Great Soils activity, and there are many projects in the programme, but today I'm joined by AHDB's Amanda Bennett to discuss one of them. The project looks at the hidden world of soil biology and soil health, a world that is both fascinating and complex. Amanda, thanks for joining me today. Now, soil physics, soil chemistry and soil biology are all intertwined, but this project just looks specifically at the latter one. So why is it so important to look at soil biology and why now?
So you're right in that soil biology is often overlooked as an element of soil. The programme actually isn't exclusively looking at biology. It is bringing together the physics, the chemistry and the biology because it is recognised that those are all very important components. Obviously, the soil biology is a driving force below ground, a huge amount of biomass of different organisms, huge diversity, some unknown already, some known, some unknown. The functions that the soil organisms carry out, whether that's decomposition, nutrient cycling, or their direct interactions with plant roots, either as a soil-borne pathogen or even as a beneficial organism, and that can all impact on crop productivity.
As far as I understand it, soil biology is probably not as well understood as maybe the physical and chemical components. Would you say that's true?
There is a lot of research that has been done around understanding soil biology, and as molecular techniques have moved forward, there is it's revealed that the diversity of organisms that are in the soil. So there is a lot of research that's been done. I think the question comes in around how you interpret that and the implications in the farming system, for example.
So the interpretation thing is an interesting angle. So this project builds itself as a partnership, and I think this is where this interpretation thing comes in and why the partnership might be so important. It is a little bit unusual for AHDB to have a partnership project. So can you explain what that actually means and who those partners are?
Yes, so we have a large number of collaborators on this work. So the partnership approach is to bring in expertise both from academia and from industry to build on the knowledge and the experience of those participants in the work and to bring together that knowledge to drive the industry forward.
Okay, so the work's been running for around 2 years now. So let's dig a little bit deeper and find out what's been discovered so far. I understand one of the early tasks that the partnership has done is setting the scene, looking at benchmarking and baselining the soil. So tell us a little bit about that, what the team's unearthed.
The first year of the partnership programme was to look at what's already known, what's out there already. We have a lot of information, as mentioned previously, about the physics and the chemistry of soil, and there is a lot of research that's been going on around soil biology. This partnership is not looking to start again. We're not starting from scratch. We're building on what's already known. So there were a number of different projects in that first year's work package. One was to look at taking some of that information that has already been developed in science research and how to translate that information for interpretation use on farm. I mean, for example, one of the projects that did a literature review, we found there were over 40,000 scientific references in the last 5 years around soil health. How much of that is actually making it out onto farm? So that first project was looking at that, bringing some of that information, bringing the principles together, the drivers of soil biology and how that can be translated for on-farm use. The other projects were looking to pull together a list of physical, chemical and biological indicators that could be used to measure and monitor soil health, so just sort of agreeing what they were. Again, a huge number of indicators are available, have been researched, but not necessarily brought into practice. And the third part was really looking to the future a little bit around the molecular approaches and just scoping out what potential there is for using these DNA technology and high throughput sequencing to understand soil microbial communities and what the scope of that was for use as an on-farm tool. One other point on that as well, so part of the first year's work was really around knowledge exchange and getting industry engagement. So there were a series of workshops to make sure that project research was going in the right direction and also to understand what the current industry perspectives were around that. And that's feeding forward into the research that's going ahead for the next few years.
So you mentioned there that in this baselining work, you've unearthed thousands of research projects, and I think that somehow reflects the diversity of soil. I mean, there's so much to think about when it comes to soil. And you mentioned the indicators that you are starting to find. Now, I think one element that the project's trying to do is to take this universe of soil and draw a map so people can find the way to the indicators that actually can make a difference to them. Can you tell us a little bit more about that element?
Yes, so the project that's completed was sort of assessing what indicators were out there, how user-friendly they were, did we have the capacity in the UK to be able to deliver those sorts of technologies, and have they been tested sort of on our soil types, for example. They were the indicators that were shortlisted to be taken forward in the scorecard. Some of them are already used widely, so for example, pH or measuring bulk density on soil. And we know what the thresholds for less desirable or desirable are for around those different indicators. There are then some that are less well developed, where we know some information around them, but they haven't necessarily been validated on UK soil types or to have that understanding around how they can be interpreted. And then some more novel techniques, particularly around the biology, so looking at DNA measures and looking at microarthropods and nematodes, for example, to understand whether they could be used as indicators in the soil as well. So the idea is that for each of this shortlist, there will be a bit like a school report, really. So instead of having a soil health index of 3, what does that mean? Each of those indicators will then be broken down a bit like a school report. So for each subject, you get, oh, they're quite good at this, or you need a bit more attention at this area. So they'll be colour-coded as to be red, amber, or green, and this will be based around the threshold levels that will hopefully be developed over the course of the research in the programme, so that we get a feeling for when you go out and do the scorecard, you get the range of indicators, and then hopefully an overall picture of where the areas are that need a little bit more attention, or it can flag up if there's an issue.
You mentioned there about the indicators and soil management, but soil management is really a long term game, and I think that's a difficult nut to crack. But this work includes, it's not just looking at what's been done and reviewing data; it's actually generating new data as well. And part of this is the use of long term experimental sites and studies there, which can help us understand how management in one year can potentially impact on subsequent years. And what specifically are these studies looking at?
Because soil management changes do take a long time for any effects to be noticed or be able to be monitored and measured in that way, the long-term experimental sites that have been chosen for use in this study are ones that we have a back history of data for. So they're looking at biological drivers, so really the biology needs a good physical environment and food sources coming in to sustain it. So the long-term experimental sites are focusing on things like organic matter inputs, drainage, tillage, rotation, and they have, as I mentioned, a back history of data associated with those. And at these sites, the different treatments have shown effects, for example, in yield or other crop characteristics. So for each of the sites, we're looking at a control plot, and then, for example, at the organic matter site, there'll be farmyard manure, compost, and a range of different amendments that have been carried out over a long period of time. We've seen that those have impacted on the crop. Now what we want to go and do is take that scorecard, because the sites have not really looked at the biology, go and do the scorecard assessment and see whether the indicators that are on the scorecard, physical, chemical, and biological, whether they actually show up the differences between those different treatments that are being seen elsewhere or have been noticed over the long-term experiment. Obviously, the key thing is if there is a difference in crop yield, but the indicator isn't showing anything, is it a good indicator? So we need to assess what it's indicative of.
Yeah, so cause and effect, in essence. So we know that we get differences in yield, and we're always trying to understand what those differences are. This work seems to be unpicking that and be looking at the things that can contribute to those yield differences, and actually being able to say, yes, this is the thing that matters to yield. So that's really good. One thing you mentioned is about the pathogens in the soil and the biology and the life that's in the soil, and the potential to use the rapidly developing tools in the molecular world, molecular biology, to be able to maybe detect and maybe even quantify elements of biology within the soil. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
One of the projects within the partnership programme is looking specifically at the development of molecular techniques. So already there are diagnostic tools available to be able to detect specific pathogens in soil. What we're looking to do is to better understand that and use that as a tool across a rotation to detect a suite of pathogens in the soil, but actually also understanding the environmental effects on that as well. And because we have these different management practices, to actually understand how that influences the pathogen behaviour. Just because you can detect it in the soil, at what point is it going to cause disease in the growing crop? Another element of work is looking at the more general microbial communities and using high-throughput sequencing to actually understand the microbial community in general in the soil, whether that how that maybe develops over time with a change in management practice, or if that can develop a suppressive state in the soil to potentially suppress some of the pathogens that are there. So, for example, you might be detecting that the pathogen is there, but whether it goes on to cause disease may depend on the interactions it has with the rest of the soil community. So it's quite a complicated area. These are being taken forward into PhD studentship projects within the partnership.
We mentioned earlier on about how it's a partnership and it involves farmers, and there have been a number of farmer groups set up, and I understand that when we put a call out for these farmer groups, it was quite popular and a lot of people were very keen to get involved. So you can tell us specifically about those farmer groups and what the kind of things they're exploring and looking at.
Yeah, absolutely. So key part of this work is knowledge exchange. We want to make sure that what we're delivering for farmers is right for them. So as well as the scorecard being tested on these long-term experimental sites with very much controlled conditions on replicated plots, for example, we want to make sure that farmers have the ability to feed back into the process as well and how they could potentially see it working on their own farms. So we have 8 farmer groups set up now across different regions of the country and different production systems as well. And starting this autumn, they're going to go out and have a look at a pared-down approach to the scorecard, because the molecular techniques are not necessarily ones that are cost-effective at the moment to be taken forward on a routine basis, and that might be something that will come with time. So the farmer groups are going to test a pared-down version of the scorecard on their own farms, and then come together as groups to discuss how that goes, and their feedback will then inform what we need to improve on, take forward, or bring in new ideas, because a lot of farmers have got innovations on their own farms that they are prepared to share with us that we could potentially build into programs from.
That's brilliant. Thanks for joining us today, Amanda. The partnership doesn't end till 2021, but the researchers are publishing their findings as they go along rather than wait until the end, which is great. To access further information from the project, including the latest report, just simply head to ahdb.org.uk/greatsoils.
Next up, Elizabeth Stockdale leads the Farming Systems Research Team at NIAB and also the Soil Biology and Soil Health Research and Knowledge Exchange Partnership for AHDB. Here she is to explain more.
The partnership's been going since January 2017, so a year and a half or thereabouts. And the first year we focused on reviewing what we already knew, where the gaps were in knowledge, but particularly bringing together where there was already information about soil health that just wasn't being communicated well to growers, but also talking very closely to growers about what they needed and what their sort of key wants were from any work going on soil health. A really important part of the programme is to work with farmers, particularly innovative farmers who are testing, already implementing really interesting soil health innovations on farm. And so we are taking the scorecard we've developed and asking those farmers to put it into practice, to try it out, so they can tell us, well, that really didn't work, or that told us something really interesting. And we're doing that as part of groups of farmers. So soil health scorecards, nothing complicated. A bit like your report card from school, it lists the subjects you've studied and how you got on in them. And so a soil health scorecard lists some key indicators of the soil physical condition, chemical condition and biological condition, and then gives you an indication of how you're getting on. And a really healthy soil is obviously doing really well in all areas, and actually a balance of all those things is really important. So we didn't want to reduce it all to just one number, you're coming third in the class, but actually to kind of give the detail that allows farmers to say, actually, the chemistry and the biology look pretty good, but actually there's something not so good about the physical condition, or vice versa. So that farmers can unpick some of the things they might want to take action about from looking at that report. So in terms of testing it on farm and putting it into practice, we're asking farmer groups to work together and identify the most interesting sites for them to make comparisons. So, for example, we've done a farm walk with one group, and we sampled deliberately as we went a reseed, a block of soil in the arable rotation, and a very long-term pasture. Now, those are interesting just to compare in themselves, but the rest of the group then said, I'll go home and I'll sample on a different soil type, another reseed. And we've got something like 5 different reseeds. So we'll be able to see if the indicators are change a lot with soil type, but that's the same in reseeds, or change a lot with reseed, you know, whether it's reseed or long pasture, but so whether it's management or soil type that matters. So there are other group farmers in that group who are sampling pastures and others sampling from the arable rotation. And then I've got a group in the north, in Aberdeenshire, who are very looking at rotations with potatoes and different points in that rotation and different cultivation systems and amount of organic matter they're incorporating. So we're just trying to get this range of different places where we can see, is the scorecard really telling us anything useful? And then having some really interesting conversations with the farmers about what those data mean. And we hope that will help us really benchmark that scorecard, give it some really sound foundations in practice, and allow us to develop something that will be a really good tool for farmers in the long term going forward. We focus so far in the programme on really looking at what we can learn to give us robust indicators. You can measure all sorts of things in soils, and some of them are useful. They link to crops and crop growth or environmental impact, and others are just, well, it's easy to measure it, but we don't understand how the links work. So some of those things are really well established, things like phosphorus, extractable phosphorus or extractable potassium or pH, and things like carbon respiration from soils, or the number of earthworms that are there, or the DNA barcode, are really new and exciting, but actually aren't so well linked to crop health. So we've been looking at a mixture of those and looking at the literature and trying to give ourselves the best possible start. So we kind of give ourselves a really strong foundation. So we know which are really good indicators we know will work already, some that we want to test, where maybe we know it's a good indicator, but we don't know which things should get a green and an amber and a red. And then some, like the DNA indicators, where they're really new. I think even by the end of this program in 4 years' time, we won't have them really ready, perfectly ready to go out onto farm, but we'll understand much better about what we can and can't learn from that huge wealth of DNA in the soil. So any farmer can already start to put some of these things together for themselves. A lot of it's just about using your observational skills on farm with a spade in hand. So that combination of having a spade in the vehicles on the farm, so that when you see something, oh, that looks a bit wet, or oh, I wonder why that's doing, you can immediately get out and have a look. When I say have a look, all the information obviously about doing the visual assessment of soil structure for grassland or for arable soils is available, linked through from the AHDB Great Soils website. So you can kind of follow through those methodologies and really break open that block and see how the structure works. Well, you've got a block of soil in your hand, why not count the earthworms? And again, there's some really good links on the AHDB website and information about how to count those worms and make sense of them. And then if you really want to do that joining up, some of that soil collected and sent away for analysis can tell you a little bit about the chemistry, the pH, PKs, perhaps something like magnesium and calcium as well. So you're already beginning to build up your own picture. But the really important thing, if you're going to do that, is to choose where you take those samples. So you might choose to sample in one field where you know you've got a really good area and a really bad area, and your question is, why are they different? Or you might want to compare fields that in theory are the same soil type but under different managements. I wonder what different that management I've put into place. So you can, as a farmer, use lots of different tools, even just the spade and none of the rest of it, to really understand how your management's changing your soils, because the key to good soil health is really just knowing your soils well.
So looking to the future, what do you think is going to be the next big thing in our understanding of soil health, or affecting the way that we think about soil health?
So I think the DNA indicators, the DNA-based indicators, so CSI for soils, where we extract the DNA from the soils, and not just the DNA, but also the messenger RNA and other enzymes and indicators as well, that give us an idea of what biology is really there, because most of the biology in soils is invisible. It's not possible to see it with our eyes, and it's actually quite tricky to measure in any other way. And that diversity is important, but we don't quite know what it's up to and why. So making those links, DNA and other molecular-based indicators, are really going to be, I think, a step change in how we understand. Now, that might just be a research tool. So it might just be that researchers end up using those tools to give farmers then better principles and understanding, or it might be that that becomes the kind of tool that instead of just sending soils off for phosphorus and potassium and pH, we start sending them off for DNA to find what this particular organism is up to in our soils, whether it's a soil-borne disease organism and we want to know about the risk of disease, or whether it's something like one of the organisms that releases nutrients from organic matter and makes those more available and promotes nutrient use efficiency, or it might be the fungus that associates itself with the roots and allows the roots to explore the soil for nutrients and water more effectively. And if we can measure and know how much we've got, and at the same time know what practices we might put in place to improve, actually those two things might make it possible for us to manage soil biology in a way that we haven't been before. I don't think it'll be soon, but it might be in 10 years, and I think there might be some key organisms that we're looking out for. But in the short term, it's that making those links between physical, chemical and biological properties and looking at the soil as a whole in the context of crop production that's going to be most important. So I think all the farmers are aware of the changes or aware there will be changes in agricultural support, and aware that the government's got its eye very strongly on healthy soils and then really supporting and developing healthy soils. And inherently, I don't think that's something that should actually make farmers afraid, because farmers want healthy soils to produce healthy crops. So actually this is one of those perhaps rare occurrences where government aspiration and farmers' aspiration can work together, because actually we know there's really good evidence of farmers improving soil health through the practices they're adopting. And so we just need to be able to share information about what those practices are and how they work best for us most effectively. And this podcast and everything that follows it will be a really good start for that. And I think, you know, measuring and monitoring soil health on farm needs to work really well for the farmers, so that the farmer themselves can have the tools they need to make best management practices. And if policymakers want to measure soil health, they're probably going to need slightly different tools, and they're going to need to sample and measure in slightly different ways. But the ideal will be where those two sorts of information come together and actually allow us to understand our soils better.
One of the farmers in Elizabeth's group was Ed Reynolds. I called him earlier this month to find out about what he's been doing.
My name is Ed Reynolds. I farm in West Cambridgeshire. I'm a cereals and combinable crops farmer. Been farming for 10 years. We are on clay soil, exclusively clay soil. That presents a few challenges. When the soil is wet, it is very plastic, and if you traffic on it while it's wet or try and establish crops, it can do long-term harm as well. So essentially we try and work it when it's dry, and in return you can often grow a very good crop because it retains the moisture, it holds on to nutrients that the crop needs very well, and if you can get a crop established, it will produce good yields. I'm part of a group in the Midlands that is trying to get a better understanding of soil health and what are the indicators for soil health as a term. And we have been looking at soil sampling techniques in order to try and go back onto our own farms, take the samples, and then meet back up in our discussion groups and look at the findings and try and discuss the differences and then try and apply that to different practices we're employing on the farm to see if that is influencing soil health, in inverted commas. We're only at the beginning of year one, so it's early days, but we've been working with Elizabeth Stockdale trying to identify what we feel is sort of soil health. We've had a meeting trying to brainstorm sort of general indicators of what is good and what is bad. I think we've come up with a set of variables that we're measuring. So we've just taken our soil samples this week. We're hoping to identify some differences in our soil types, but also moving on from there, try and see how different practices are affecting these soil health indicators. We're basically looking at not just the nutrients in the soil, but also we are trying to assess soil structure, the physical state of the soil, by digging test holes in areas that are repeatable and trying to break down the soil and score it according to the scorecards that we've been given, and look at basically aggregation and look at the presence of worms and whether or not they're juveniles or not, and just try and get an indication of the physical soil health. It's quite early days, so I'm not entirely sure what will be sort of useful and what won't be, but a lot of the farmers in our sample have similar soil, even though there are different practices occurring. So it's a similar clay-based soil, although not exclusively clay-based. So from my point of view, that would be very interesting to see other farmers in similar soil with different situations. I think it's really the different cultivation strategies, different treatments of the soil that we're hoping to see variations over the 3-year lifespan of the project, and try and attribute various differences in the soil results to practices. And that's not just cultivations, that's also rotation and grazing, the incorporation of grass lays into arable, traditionally arable soils, and to see what effect that has. I think one of the other elements of our group is that we've got a mixture of young and old farmers, land managers, farm managers. We've got a healthy mix of enthusiasm, inquiry as to knowledge, but also quite a lot of scepticism. I'm hoping that as the 3 years goes on, we'll sort of learn off each other and try and be kept grounded, but at the same time move forward a bit with some of the information we get. That should be very interesting.
That's all for now. If you want to find out more about AHDB's latest soil health and soil science research, including a new information sheet on testing soil health, head to ahdb.org.uk/greatsoils or read down in the episode notes. You might also be interested in the Agronomists Conference on the 4th and 5th of December this year, which has a strong focus on soil health and how to measure and manage it. Thanks very much for listening.